Hello, everybody. This is Thomas Aaron from Fetch Masters Dog Training, and I am here with my wife and business partner, Linda.
Hello.
Today, we are going to talk about recall. And by recall, what I mean is when you call your dog to come to you and your dog comes to you, that's called recall, so coming when called. In order to train any obedience command, it is really important to understand exactly what response you are wanting from the dog. If you don't understand what response you're wanting from the dog, it doesn't make sense for your dog to understand the response that you're wanting. So coming when called is a bit of a precision operation. You want to have very clear communications with your dog about exactly what you want. At Fetch Masters, we work with a lot of dogs who have poor recall or sometimes no recall at all. And there are basically five reasons for that. Number one, we find that people left to their own devices will depend on the dog to learn to come when called by osmosis. The dog just figures it out. And people think their dog is coming to them when called, but what the dog is often doing is just coming to their tone of voice or their body movements. And we also find that that sort of self-training on the dog's part, if you will, often doesn't carry over into a difficult environment. The second reason we see dogs with poor or no recall is that a lot of times people allow the dogs far too much freedom off leash before the dog's training warrants that level of freedom. Now, the third reason is that people have partially taught recall. They've kind of got it, right? They've taught the dog what come means. Dog sort of gets it, but they've missed one of the most important elements of training recall, and that is defining a termination posture. And Linda's going to talk to us a little more about that in a few minutes. The fourth reason that we see dogs come through here with very poor or no recall is that people actually poison the recall command. They punish the dog when it comes. And now when I say they punish the dog when it comes, that could be a literal punishment, like the dog does something wrong and the people call it and then, you know, get mad at the dog and the dog says, well, you know, that stunk. I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. And that'll poison it. But there's other ways that you can punish a dog for recall that isn't really done in the spirit of punishment. Remember, punishment isn't what you think is punishment. Punishment is what the dog thinks is punishment. So we'll get into that more as well. And the fifth reason that I want to discuss that we see dogs come through here with poor or no recall is that people have taught a good recall using only treats as the reward, but they learn pretty quickly that treats are not enough to overcome some of the tougher distractions outdoors. So those are the five basic things we want to cover, and let's go through those kind of one by one. So Linda, could you please talk to our listeners a little bit about the problem with allowing a dog to learn recall by osmosis?
Yes. So essentially when you get a new dog, whether as a puppy or a rescue or, you know, however you acquire a new dog, you're building a bond and a relationship early on. And oftentimes the dog is particularly interested early on in those first weeks in bonding with you. You know, the reason that we get dogs isn't just because we want dogs, it's also because dogs bond so well with humans, and the relationship that's created between human and canine is really rewarding for both. So oftentimes people early on are relying on what Tom said earlier, more of a tone or a body language. I call it coaxing, where you're like, Scruffy, Scruffy, come here, Scruffy. And you pat your leg and you bend over and you sort of give that very inviting, fun, playful sounding tone and posture. And oftentimes dogs will respond to that by coming near to you because that's an invitation. And they're very interested in those early days in responding to those invitations. But once they become comfortable, once the relationship becomes established, I've often told clients that in the early weeks of having a dog, it's almost like the early weeks of dating. you know, there's a whole lot of love in the air. And even though you'll love your dog longer term, once the relationship is established, oftentimes you will see dogs start to assert more independence once they're more comfortable with you and the home and the relationship. And when that starts to happen, that coaxing typically fails at that point. So the other thing that it's really important to know is that dogs need to understand exactly what recall means. They need to know its definition, if you will. They need to understand when it starts and when it ends. And it needs to be not vague. There needs to be a very clear set of things that they do so that it's very, they can execute it each time correctly without making a mistake. And when they do this enough times, they can develop the muscle memory and habitual behavior that will really make recall reliable.
Awesome. Yeah, there sure was a lot of love in the air when you and I first started dating. I can remember it clearly. And also, isn't it kind of funny that whenever we talk about a hypothetical dog, its name is always Scruffy? That must be a Fetch Masters thing. Okay, so the second problem that I mentioned, Linda, was people giving their dog more freedom than it is ready for. Can you sort of discuss that a little bit?
Yes. So essentially, because coaxing works pretty well early on, a lot of time, and also with younger dogs, a lot of times people are lulled into believing that their dog is off-leash reliable before it actually is. So they will then extend freedom to that dog that that dog's not really prepared for yet. And the way I like to explain it is this. Having a reliable recall outdoors in high distraction environments is like getting a driver's license. It's a pretty advanced skill. And it's something that a young dog that's still a juvenile, that is not fully mature, is oftentimes not capable of yet. It's also something that only a responsible person can do. In other words, if your dog does not yet have responsibility, or another way to put that is reliability, in their behavior, then they're not really ready to have their driver's license yet. That's just something they can't do yet. But the other problem that kind of crops in is that oftentimes people feel that dogs need to have freedom. They think that essentially a dog is not going to enjoy their life or not going to have a good life if they don't have off-leash, unbridled freedom. And that's kind of a myth. So, for example, a lot of times a dog can really, really enjoy going to a dog park. They can have a ton of fun if they like other dogs. They can expend huge amounts of energy and really enjoy it. But it's not really unbridled total freedom. I mean, every dog park that I've ever been to has a fence around it. So the concept that a dog has to have off-leash freedom in order to experience enjoyment is just not really correct. And so at Fetch Masters, we believe that it's really important to have a dog that is capable of reliable behavior, fully mature enough to be able to handle the freedom that it's given, and have ingrained habitual recall that has muscle memory to it, that the dog just automatically knows to do it and does it because it's practiced it so many times. It's just automatic. It's just part of who they are. Before you have that dog do those things in an off-leash way in an environment that's very distracting. And so we use a long lead. And this long lead that you put on the dog when it's outdoors and you want to give it a little bit more freedom gives you the ability to teach the dog slowly over time as they mature how to handle these environments and those distractions without them being able to, you know, just run off and basically reward themselves in that environment. And self-rewarding is something you have to watch out for also, because if a dog can reward themselves in an environment and they don't have to seek you to receive rewards, then they're probably not going to. And we'll talk more about that in just a little bit.
Okay, good points. You had mentioned earlier, Linda, that it's really important for a dog to understand the definition of come, or understand exactly what you want when you say come. And one of the things that we've come to understand over the years is that it is critically important in order to train a really solid recall for the recall to have a termination posture. So please talk a little bit about what a termination posture is and why it's important.
A termination posture is a clear ending to the recall. And a clear ending, as well as a beginning, are crucial. So dogs don't do very good with vague. And when you're trying to train recall, vague is your enemy. Essentially, if you train a termination posture, your dog knows that the end goal is to do that posture. So for example, most times we train that the end posture is to sit in front of me or sit in front of the person that called you. And if the dog understands that sitting directly in front of you is the goal, then they're far less likely to deviate from getting to you and sitting in front of you until they've accomplished that goal. And so by training the recall to be very clear and terminate with a specific posture, you're teaching the dog that when I say come, that's when it starts. And the final goal is to sit in front of me. So they're going to hurry up. They're going to come straight to you. They're probably not going to deviate. And they're going to sit at the end, which defines the end. It's over. So it makes it very clear for the dog to understand what's expected.
One of the ways I like to talk to clients about this is I'll ask a client, you know, what does come mean to you? If you tell your dog come, what do you want? And sometimes they'll say, well, I want him to move in my direction. That's probably the most common answer. Sometimes they'll say something like, well, I want him to come over here where I am, which, you know, I understand what the client means, but to the dog, that might be nebulous. And it, I think because of that nebulous nature of that way of thinking, you end up with what we call drive-bys, where the dog runs up to you and then flies past you, or you end up where the dog runs partially toward you, then finds something else to sniff. You know, in the dog's mind, he kind of did what you asked. So yeah, that termination posture shows the dog what the appropriate end is for that behavior. So good points. So I also talked about how people accidentally poison their recall cue. And just to remind everybody, when we say cue, it might be what you call a recall command, but it's basically the word that you use to call the dog. People poison that. What are some of the ways, Linda, that people poison the recall cue? And what can be done about that?
Well, it's, if you think about it, the nature of recall lends very, if you think about it, the nature of recalling your dog lends itself easily to poisoning. And what I mean by that is that typically when we call a dog to us, we're calling them away from something. And not always, but most of the time, the something is something the dog either finds fun or rewarding. So here's a few examples. Come inside from the backyard. And the dog's been enjoying being out in the backyard, looking at the squirrels in the trees, sniffing around, playing with its toys, hanging out with the neighbor dog next door behind the fence. So the other most common things are come so I can put you in your crate. Well, even though you do a really good job crate training a dog, most dogs enjoy being out when you're home as opposed to going in their crate. So that's not always very enjoyable for them. Or come when you're at a dog park. Dogs running around, having fun, playing with lots of other dogs, and now it's time to go home. And so the fun has to end. And that's how I commonly explain it to people, is that oftentimes in our day-to-day use of using recall, we're actually ending the dog's fun, or we're taking something the dog finds rewarding away from them. So essentially, the recall is a punishment. And that's what Tom was really, sort of hinting at when he was talking at the beginning. The way that you can overcome this is actually pretty simple. You basically want to teach the dog through a couple of different ways that recall doesn't mean end of fun. Recall means come check in, come see me, and then you get to go back and do what you were doing. By and large, not always, but a good percentage of the time. So, for example, if your dog is in the backyard, you would stand at your back door and you would call your dog to you. When your dog gets there and sits in front of you, you would tell them, all right, good, all done, go back out, and send them back out. And you would do that a few different times over the course of a few minutes before you finally said the last come and took your dog inside, so that your dog gets used to hearing you say come and gets used to coming in and checking with you. But most of the time, they get to go back to what they were doing, and i.e. the reward or the thing they were enjoying, and they don't have to have that ended abruptly and immediately. And another way that we do this is that when there is, you know, something else that the dog enjoys that they're participating in, is we send them back to that. So if it's, say, another dog, we'll call them to us, you know, finish it, and then send them back to see the other dog. And then we'll just kind of drill that. So if you drill situations like that, where the dog just gets used to coming and checking in, but then gets to go back, come and check in, gets to go back, and that just becomes repetitive over and over, the association that they develop about come is, it's a quick check-in. It doesn't mean end of fun. It's not something to avoid or to not look forward to doing. And that's how you develop a reliable recall without poisoning it.
You know, it's kind of common in the dog training world for people who use treats to be called cookie pushers and stuff like that. And, you know, we use a ton of treats in our training. And treats typically are good for basic recall training. However, there comes a point when treats hit a limitation. And that is when the distraction level becomes so valuable that treats just can no longer compare to it. And at some point in your training, that has to be addressed. So, Linda, can you talk a little bit about the limitations of treats in training and just some brief notes on how we start to overcome that in the more advanced stages of our training?
Treats are, if the dog's pretty food motivated, they're really great for early recall training. But typically, once you start to get into more distracting environments, not all, but a large percentage, overwhelming percentage of dogs oftentimes find the things in the environment to be far more rewarding. And so they see those things as rewards. And just to give you a couple of examples, other dogs that might be present in the environment, other people that might be present, prey animals, smells, a body of water. Those are just the most common examples of things that we deal with on a daily basis, but there's others. It's pretty much whatever a dog enjoys or tends to gravitate towards when they're outside. And so we use what's called the PREMAC principle, and we use it to really help create a reliable recall in those environments. The PREMAC principle is essentially this. If you reward a less likely behavior with a more likely behavior, you increase the likelihood of the less likely behavior. That's a lot of likelies. So without all those likelies, it's pretty much this. If you want your dog to come, that's the less likely behavior, away from the squirrel in the tree, that's staying near the squirrel is the more likely behavior, then if you reward your dog with the squirrel in the tree for coming, you're likely to improve them coming to you more often. So the PREMAC principle is allow your dog to have the things it wants in the environment for doing what you say. And they don't get to do those things until they do what you say. So we use the PREMAC principle every day in training recall. And the long lead is crucial to that. So, you know, this can't be done when the dog is off leash in the early phases of training, because there is no way to get the dog to finish a recall, especially in those higher distractions. So a long lead is really necessary for that.
Awesome. Great concepts. I had thought of something when you were talking about poisoning the recall cue that I wanted to kind of share with everybody. Linda, perhaps you remember before we got married, when we were doing premarital counseling and learning how to be married, we learned about a concept called the love bank. And in the concept of the love bank, what it states is basically, if every time I do something nice for you or treat you nicely, it's like putting a penny in the love bank. And every time I mess up, which, as you know, is fairly frequently, it's like taking a penny out of the love bank. And so the idea of the love bank is that I want to put enough pennies in that love bank that if one gets taken out, it doesn't bankrupt the love bank. And the reason I bring this up is it's kind of similar with recall. Most of the time when we call our dog to us, you know, it would rather be doing something else. Otherwise, it wouldn't be out there. And sometimes the reward that you have is not going to be great enough to be equal to what the dog would have had he just stayed out there doing what he was doing. So the idea is to put enough pennies in the recall bank, if you will, that when you do call your dog to you and you have to take a penny out of that recall bank, you don't bankrupt it and poison it and ruin it. Anyway, I just wanted to add that. Linda, do you have anything else that you want to add to this?
Yes, but before that, I just want to say that, yes, you do take some pennies out of the love bank, but you have gotten much better over the years at adding more pennies than taking pennies out. Hence the reason we're still together. But anyway, we digress. So the last thing I wanted to say about recall is that Earlier, I told you recall is more of an advanced skill. I equate it to a dog getting their driver's license. You know, it's not something that a five-year-old kid can do. They can't go and get their driver's license. But a responsible, educated teenager, you know, usually in the neighborhood of 16 or 17, who has grown, got some impulse control, has physical maturity, and, you know, gone through driver's ed, can get their driver's license. So essentially, you want to think about recall like this. You can't train a reliable recall, especially in an outdoor high distraction environment, if your dog won't sit for you, if your dog won't do a downstay for you, if your dog won't heel and walk on a leash nicely without pulling it. In other words, if your dog does not have the foundation, doesn't have the basic education, doesn't have the basic amount of impulse control to do those things for you, and that you and your dog don't have the kind of relationship that your dog that understands that the things that you tell him to do are not optional, then recall is a pie in the sky dream. And so before you even think about starting to develop that, you've got to make sure those things are in place first. Thanks, everybody. It was good talking to you today.
Yep. Thanks for listening. This is Tom and Linda Aaron signing out.